So I just pulled up to the house and it feels super weird. My stomach hurts. All right, let's do this.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Enchant Me podcast. I'm Kim Selby, and I'll be your host as we go looking for creative inspiration in everyday life. In each episode, we'll talk about a quick 1 or 2 hour excursion we go on that's meant to feed our creative spirit and refill our reservoir of internal inspiration. Our excursions are based on the concept of the artist date, one of the tools in The Artist Way, a book by Julia Cameron, which is a great book to read if you're looking to bring more creativity into your life, no matter where you might find it. So let's get started. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 105 of the Enchant Me podcast. I'm Kim Selby, and before we get started, I just want to say thanks for being here and thanks for taking a listen. This week's artist date is a little bit out of the norm of some of the other excursions I've gone on and have planned, but it was something that when I became aware of it, I knew I had to do. When I learned about this opportunity, and I'm not really sure opportunity is the exact right word, I hadn't thought about it as an artist date. But the more I thought about it, the more I began to see it in this light. I realized that doing this would definitely be a chance to be inspired in one way or another, although exactly how I wouldn't know until it was done. I'm a member of a handful of local neighborhood Facebook groups, and one afternoon while scrolling through, an image appeared that stopped my scrolling in its tracks. It seemed at the same time completely out of place on my phone screen to the point of feeling jarring and obtrusive, but immediately familiar in a "this photo just pinged my lizard brain" sort of way. I think I even blinked a couple of times so my present-day brain could process the photo. The posting was for a real estate listing and open house advertisement for the house that I grew up in. Well, spent most of my time growing up in. And the photo that was on my phone was of the house itself. At the risk of turning this episode into a giant therapy session, let's just say that I categorized my childhood in two ways, before the move and after the move. I classify my before the move life as idyllic. We lived in a small but not too small town just outside of Philadelphia where everyone seemed to know each other and you knew not only your neighbors, but you knew you're around the corner and across town neighbors too. The town had a very strong sense of community, and I was an extremely happy and well-adjusted kid. Then the proverbial hammer fell, and I learned that we were moving. So, during the summer between 7th and 8th grades, the house in my beloved and quintessential small town was sold and packed up, and I was dragged kicking and screaming, quite literally at times, into my new life. Although we moved less than 20 miles away, it may as well have been 2000. We moved from Pennsylvania to New Jersey, and although both towns are considered suburbs of Philadelphia, they were worlds apart. My new town was bigger, more sprawling, more like a small city than the leafy burg that I had called home for almost all of my about to turn 13 years. The house was bigger, the yard was bigger, my new school was bigger, everything was bigger. Suffice it to say that I went practically overnight from being a happy-go-lucky on top of the world kid to being an inconsolable, resentful, and angry teen. That summer was, and in some ways still is, a defining event for me. I hated my life, I hated everyone around me for ruining my life, and I hated that house, no matter how big and how nice and how new it was. And now it was for sale and staring back at me through my phone, inviting me, or maybe daring me, to come to its open house. I need to pause for just a second and mention that all of this went down more than 30 years ago. I eventually regained my sense of self, or whatever that turns into in middle and high school. I made my way through, slogged my way through is probably more accurate, but I made it. I really only lived full-time in that house for 5 years, but those 5 years loomed large. I couldn't wait to graduate high school, and once I left for college, I think I only lived there again full-time during the summer after freshman year. The university I attended was only 50 miles away, so it was easy enough to go back and forth while living close to campus during the following summers. In the grand scheme of things, 5 years is not that long. So why did I want to do this? Truth be told, I would have done it regardless if I had used it as an artist date or not. But the idea that maybe I could find some kind of creative inspiration by doing this was intriguing to me. And as much as I had held on to the bad memories of that time, when I thought about it, I was able to recall a lot of good times too, especially ones in which I was occupying my time with something creative. Taking improv and theater classes at school, participating in summer theater programs, designing hundreds of my own MTV logos, and practicing drawing the Van Halen VH over and over again until I got it right. I covered the walls of my bedroom with interview magazine covers, Absolute Vodka ads, and detailed photo collages of Rob Lowe. I listened to Madonna and Pink Floyd late into the night on my Walkman while I lay in bed wishing to return to my old life. The ironic detail of this situation, and one that a better storyteller may have saved for Act 3 of this particular tale, is the fact that I currently live less than a mile away. 0.7 miles to be exact. No matter how badly I recall living in that house and how much I longed to finish high school and make my escape, I can right now easily walk to it in 20 minutes. I can ride my bike in 10. I can drive in 3. The night before the open house, I laid in bed thinking about what it would be like to walk up that driveway again and open the front door. My parents sold it in 1993, and doing the math right now, that turns out to be 25 years ago. A quarter of a century. That number alone I find shocking. Although in some way that number seems fitting for a return. 25 years later, formerly angry girl returns to the place that was the focus of her anger. Will she cry? Has she softened? Will she strike a match and burn it down? Tune in next week to find out. I was feeling a bit anxious, and I did know that I was creating drama inside my head, possibly where drama need not exist. Where will I park? Do any of the old neighbors still live there? Would they recognize me if they did? Will the real estate agent know I was there to snoop and not to buy? The only person I had told about the open house was my sister, but she wasn't able to go. I hesitated to tell my parents, who, although they may have been interested to see it, had sold it because of divorce, not because of desire to do so. The next morning, I still felt the same sense of anxiety and even entertained the thought of not going, but I knew I would regret it if I bailed. Even though the house was so close to where I lived, I never really had a need to pass it. In fact, on the few occasions I did, it was almost as if there was an invisible barrier that I had to puncture to get close. I could drive or walk freely around its perimeter streets, but if I got too close, an invisible force pushed me towards another route, like two opposite ends of magnets trying to connect. So that Sunday morning, I went about my normal Sunday routine until it was time to leave, got in my car, and then decided I had 4 more errands to run before I headed over to the house. I was resisting. There's a book by Stephen Pressfield called Do the Work, Overcome Resistance, and Get Out of Your Own Way. It deals with why we seem to get stuck when we're trying to accomplish something. Pressfield categorizes resistance as invisible, insidious, impersonal, infallible, and universal. It's a quick read and can be helpful to anyone trying to get motivated to start or finish something. Here's a quick quote from the book. Resistance cannot be seen, heard, touched, or smelled, but it can be felt. We experience it as an energy field radiating from a work in potential. Resistance is a repelling force. It's negative. Its aim is to shove us away, distract us, prevent us from doing our work. A rule of thumb. The more important a call or action is to our soul's evolution, the more resistance we feel towards pursuing it. I've read this book a couple times over the years, and the idea of resistance has always stuck with me, and I'm always aware of it, although I don't always know how to fix it. Some of the ways he defined resistance is fear, self-doubt, procrastination, addiction, distraction, timidity, ego, narcissism, self-loathing, and perfectionism. That's a tough crowd, and I was in full-blown resistance mode at the moment. I allowed myself to go on one errand, and then I knew it was basically now or never time. The open house only had a 2-hour window. I didn't want to get there right when it started, but I didn't want to get there too late either. I wanted to hit it right in the middle and hopefully blend in with a crowd that would keep the real estate agent otherwise occupied. I decided that if I was going to fully immerse myself in this experience, I was going to drive the route through the neighborhood that I used to take as a teenager. As I turned from the main street into the development, it was as if my car went onto autopilot. I felt my body fall into the same position as I took the turns around the tree-lined streets, past the school bus stops that were on the route I rode before getting my driver's license. Remembering who got on where and passing by homes of classmates and neighbors I had babysat for. I had infiltrated the bubble, and there was no going back. The house was on a cul-de-sac consisting of 6 homes, and ours was the 2nd on the right as you entered. So once I turned onto the court, as it was called, there was no way to just pass it by without having to make a U-turn if I changed my mind. I parked in front of the house next door, the one closest to the adjoining street, and sat there for a minute. My stomach had a small knot, and I knew the longer I sat in the car, the longer it would take to get out. I felt self-conscious for some reason, and wished I had something more than a pair of sunglasses to render me invisible. It was the strangest feeling to be on that street again, parked in front of the house that represented all of my teenaged angst, rage, and fears. I was afraid that I was getting emotional, so I blinked back the hotness of the tears I was starting to feel and got out of the car. I walked past the mailbox at the end of the property onto the driveway, and the memories started to flow. I had promised myself that whatever I was feeling, I was going to let that come. I was hoping in some way that visiting this house would allow me to finally exercise any leftover negative feelings I had about it. Now, I must pause and remind everyone again that this all happened a very long time ago. I am currently firmly ensconced in my 40s, but in my family, my level of unhappiness at that time became family canon. The house, for the most part, looked the same. Same color siding, but different color shutters. The wooden fence surrounding the back and side yard was gone, and that surprised me because one of the great parts of that house was the private and tree-shaded yard. Now the yard was all open. The front door may have been the same, but I can't say for sure. Although from the feel of the door handle and the placement and shape of the door knocker, I might place a bet that it was. Because this was an open house, I felt no need to knock, so just as if I was entering it when it was still mine, I simply opened the door and stepped into the foyer. I could probably spend an hour on the minute details of the visit, but I'm not going to. This recording alone seems like an extremely self-indulgent exercise in navel-gazing, so breaking down this experience room by room seems unnecessary. Perhaps there are other stories to tell about this visit in other ways. I will, however, summarize instead. First, to no one's surprise, everything felt smaller. The kitchen, the bedrooms, even the staircase felt smaller. Why does that happen, I wonder? How did we fit everyone in the dining room for family celebrations? How did my parents entertain so much in the summer when the deck looked so small? Why did my sister's bedroom look so similar in size to mine when I had felt so slighted when she was awarded the bigger room? Second, every room, from the laundry room to my old bedroom, brought back vivid and sometimes obscure memories. The time my grandfather tipped over in his chair and brought Thanksgiving to a crashing and concerned, yet hilariously funny halt. The rainbow sticker that one day appeared on the back sliding glass door that was meant to stop people from walking into it and hurting themselves. The living room where guests hid to surprise my mom when she graduated from culinary school, and where my friends and I celebrated my sweet 16. the backyard where I tanned, practiced soccer maneuvers against the fence, and played with my beloved miniature schnauzer, Fritz. Third, there is such a thing as muscle memory. From the way you drove through a neighborhood, to the way you grasp a door handle, to the way you ascend a flight of stairs, things that you don't give a second thought to have a way of settling in deep. And fourth, the kitchen, although small, where we ate dinner together every night, and where family and friends ultimately gathered during the seemingly many times my parents entertained or hosted, still felt like the heart of the house. The house felt happy, like there was love there that came from its bones. Just a quick calculation of how many celebrations we had in that house was a revelation. To my surprise, the good memories that came flooding back seemed to outweigh the bad. And if that was the case, why has my association with that house always been so bad? Perhaps I had given the misery too much weight. It was becoming clear to me that for those 3 decades I let myself identify with the bad instead of looking for and remembering the good. Perhaps it was time to give as much, if not more, weight to those memories instead. As I was wrapping up my visit, I realized that I was now the only person in the house, and I did wind up talking to the real estate agent. It was interesting to hear her perspective and to have her tell me about this house that I knew so much about. She didn't know who I was, obviously, and I didn't want to let on that I had any connection to the house. So as I was leaving, it was a nice way to wrap up my visit to hear about another family's experience, another family's history inside this house that has meant so much to me over these years. I got back in my car and was really glad that I did this. And there were a number of really strong takeaways that I was beginning to process. First, stories have power. The ones we tell each other, and more importantly, the ones we tell ourselves. They have the power to shape lives and create energies all their own, but it's never too late to adjust their outcome. After the open house, I felt compelled to go home and dig through boxes of old photos I had to see if I could find any photographic evidence of that time. I knew there were photos, but what I didn't know was whether or not they captured both sides of my story. Second, creating drama for drama's sake is a crucial part of creating something. Whether it's crafting a story, designing a building, or creating an onion volcano at a hibachi table, some sort of conflict must be overcome. But in real life, creating drama for drama's sake doesn't always work in our favor. The drive to create our own narratives can be strong, but the real truths and histories always seem to reveal themselves, sometimes in the smallest or least likely of places. The scratches on a banister, the smell of a garage, or the sound a set of basement steps makes when walked on. Third, resistance is real, and the only way to push through it is to do the thing that you say you want to do. Write the story, take the class, start the business, train for the marathon. Resistance is real, it's not going anywhere, and there is no way to fully purge it from your life. You have to constantly battle through it and ignore the mental chatter that we as humans are programmed to listen to. And it will come back, but being aware of it is one of the ways you can continue to fight it. Fourth, although your own stories can't be relived, they sometimes can be revisited and reshaped in a way that makes it easier to retell. Well, if you've made it this far, thanks so much for listening. I'm going to refer to this episode as my very special episode to go along with today's trip down memory lane and in concert with some of our other 80s references. If you're interested in learning more about creative resistance and ways you can combat it, I've placed a link on the enchantmepodcast.com to Stephen Pressfield's website. And against my better judgment, I've also dropped a couple of those old photos up there too. So that's it for this episode of the Enchant Me podcast. Please join us next time when we again go looking for creative inspiration in everyday life. Don't forget, you can always visit us at theenchantmepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at theenchantmepod or on Instagram at theenchantmepodcast. The Enchant Me podcast is produced by Kim Selby and Storm Your Brain Productions. Thanks again for listening. We hope to see you again on the next episode of the Enchant Me podcast.
Hey guys, so it's a little bit before 11 o'clock on Saturday, July 28th, and I am recording a little bit of my thoughts before I head into this artist date tomorrow, which I am tentatively calling open house. Feeling a little bit of anxiety, and I think I've been feeling this anxiety for the past couple days since I actually saw the open house listing. Wasn't sure if I was going. I knew I was going to go regardless. Just wasn't sure if I was going to go by myself or if I was going to tell anybody else in my family about it. But I did tell my sister. She can't make it. And that was the extent of who I told. So I'm just going to go in tomorrow, take a run over there real quick, and just do it on my own. I feel kind of weird about it. Like I said, a little bit of anxiety. I don't even know if I have a memory of the last time I was in the house. It's loomed large over the last 3 decades. It was a house that I hated living in. I was miserable. Couldn't wait to get out of. And yet, it's always stuck with me. And, you know, I was miserable there, not for any reason. From a family point of view, I was just a miserable kid and a miserable teenager when I lived there, and I just, you know, have very mixed feelings about revisiting it, but I know I have to. When I moved back to this town last year, I was adamant about not wanting to move back to this town, and a big part of the reason for that was because I was so miserable here and have such historically bad memories and bad times. And, you know, the running joke in my family was, oh, she's blacked that out. Oh, she forgot about this. Oh, she forgot about that. And the funny, but not so funny part about that is, I always want to say to people who said that, well, do you realize why people black things out? Do you realize why people don't remember things? And it's, you know, because of trauma and it's because of suppression. And, you know, again, I just want to emphasize that there was, you know, nothing horrible that happened to me there. It just was the circumstances of us moving there. And at the time in my life that we moved, that was just such a trauma, and it was just horrible, and I was a teenager, and I could go into it, but I'm not going to. It just was a really crappy time. So I keep picturing me driving up the driveway or parking in the driveway, and I used to get yelled at for parking in the driveway, but yet I still did it because I was a rebellious kid. I was an angry kid, and just the idea of walking through that door tomorrow, it's going to be really strange to to see how I feel and see how I react. I'm already having weird thoughts about it. So we'll see what happens. It's part of, I guess, a bigger story. But I did just want to kind of capture these initial thoughts as I am getting ready to go to bed. Because tomorrow is the day, and we'll see. All right, stay tuned.